Hey, InterVarsity alumni. This is After Four, your podcast for navigating life after graduation. This is both an exciting and potentially tricky transition that you're making, and you might feel a little unsure about the coming weeks and months. We're here to provide you with expert advice, practical skills, and plenty of encouragement as you learn how to keep saying yes to Jesus in your new context. This is After Four, and this podcast is for you, alumni. What's up, alumni? Welcome to After Four, your podcast for navigating life after graduation. I'm your host and guide, John Steele, and today we're starting a new series about your upcoming vocational transition after graduation. What's it like moving from full-time academics into full-time work rhythms? And how do we follow Jesus in the context of our work? We're going to talk about these things at length in the coming weeks with insights from a number of alumni like you who have made that transition ahead of you. And this week, we're starting by laying a foundation for future conversations. We're chatting with Dr. Ryan Tafalowski and Dr. Ross Chapman, authors of the new IVP release, Faithful Work in the Daily Grind with God and for Others. And they're going to help us get a lay of the land for a biblical perspective on work and calling and partnering with Jesus in that environment. So let's get this new series started. Here's Ross and Ryan, and this one's for you, alumni. Ryan and Ross, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, John. It's good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So excited to have you guys here today. Looking forward to you helping us kick off this new series that we're doing on After Four as we think about vocational transition, stepping into the full-time professional world that many of our alumni will be doing in a number of different ways. And really laying a foundation for how we can think about that. And but before we jump into that, would you just help us, Ryan and Ross, help us get to know both of you? Who are you guys?
My name is Ryan Tafalowski. I do a couple of things. I teach theology at Denver Seminary, which is in Denver. I guess I probably didn't need to say that. I also pastor a church in Littleton in the southwest suburbs of Denver. So I work in full-time vocational ministry, but had a bunch of careers before landing here. I worked doing all kinds of things. I worked in a law firm forever. Like any self-respecting evangelical, I was a barista for a while. So I did a few things before I landed in my quote-unquote calling, and we can talk a little bit more about that. Live here with my wife, who also works in the Christian nonprofit space, and our two children, who are like 5 and 2.5. And the most important thing about me is I love all things Denver sports, the Nuggets the most, and I like them even before they were good.
Nice.
Hey, I'm Ross, and I serve as the CEO at Denver Institute for Faith and Work in Denver. But I am originally a Hoosier.
Hey.
Born and raised in the Indianapolis area. And so I am becoming a Nuggets fan. Not that I ever disliked them too much, because they're in the Western Conference and the Pacers never really made the finals except for one time against the Lakers. Unless we go back to the ABA and then we can talk about glory days. I've been in this role a year and a half. I have founded a nonprofit in Indiana called For Evansville. Did that for 7 years. Before that, I worked at an organization called Charlotte One that helped people in their 20s connect with each other, causes in the city and communities or local churches. It was a super fun job that was in Charlotte, North Carolina. And before that, I was a barista also at a local coffee shop, so that I have my, my credibility here with the audience, I guess. But it was a fun job. Didn't do it too long.
Well, I feel like I'm really missing out not having been a barista myself.
There's still time, John.
Yeah, you'll get there.
Okay. Yeah, one day. That's good. That's good. The Lord's still working on me.
I just want to mention I'm married. I have 3 boys. They're 10, 8, and 5. Candace, my wife, is she lines up private and public investment to redevelop properties in downtown Evansville, Indiana, which is where he moved from recently. So doing some really cool work.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I have to say, it's always nice to meet a fellow Hoosier who's been moved to a different space. I grew up in Warsaw.
All right.
Yes. Well, Ross, Ryan, thanks both of you for being here. Like I said already, you're going to help set us up for this series that we're talking about work. We're going to be talking to a number of our alumni in the coming weeks, just talking about what their transition into full-time work has been like and the things that they're learning about bringing Jesus with them into those contexts. And so my hope is that we can establish a foundation together here, a biblical foundation, using what you two have been doing with Faithful Work. And so could you start us off just by giving us a snapshot of Faithful Work, and then hopefully we can dig in a little bit more specifically to different pieces of it as we go.
Well, I might just start us off by saying the subtitle of the book is In the Daily Grind with God and for Others. And that's important for Ryan and I because that's true. That's where you are when you go to work. You are in the daily grind of work and all of the challenges and joys that the workplace brings, all the challenges and joys of coworkers and customers and clients and also broken systems and policies. But to recognize that you are there with God, you are not there for him. Primarily, you are there with him.
Yeah,
because he's already there and he's doing work there and he's inviting you into it. And then, you know, he's inviting you into work that benefits others, that brings kingdom values to bear in the workplace. That frames kind of what the book is about in terms of, hey, let's reframe work.
We see this as a discipleship issue, right? I think Ross and I have both worked in the church. We're both raised in the church. And one of the things, you know, we came to realize is that sometimes we don't get the best training on how to integrate our faith and our work in a church context. And there's reasons for this. You know, pastors are trying, it's hard. But we came to see, and not just us, there's a whole faith and work movement, of course, with tons of resources out there, lots of amazing organizations. But one of the central ideas is that, you know, we spend most of our waking hours in the workplace. We work more than we do just about anything else. And maybe, you know, maybe we wish it wasn't that way, but it is. So we've got to figure out a way to think Christianly about this, right? And so one of the things the book is trying to do is to sort of get people to think twice about this dichotomy that we've all assumed, that there's work that quote unquote matters to God, right? You could be a pastor, or you could be some sort of emergency relief worker, or you could be a missionary if you're really spiritual. And then there's work that everybody else does, right? And the whole point of working there is so that you can make money and give it to church so that there can be gospel work being done. And that's not to say that the work of pastors and missionaries and relief workers doesn't matter. It's just to say that God is interested in all kinds of work and is pursuing his purposes of reconciling all things to himself through all these different industries. Now, that doesn't mean it's easy or it's straightforward, but there are resources in the Christian faith that can help us there. So the book is just aimed to introduce us to those, which is to get us to see how the gospel should motivate our work spur us on and towards love of neighbor and love of the places where we are.
Why does it matter, especially for our audience who is making the transition from the school rhythms, whether they were an undergrad student or if they were a grad student, either way, moving into the professional world full time at that phase of life in particular, why does it matter? Why is it important for us to consider the way that we are thinking about work as we start to establish those rhythms?
One thing that comes to mind here is that you're transitioning out of a sort of probationary phase where your main job is to sort of train, and then you're getting out there into a whole world that is wild and full of opportunity, and it can actually be totally overwhelming. I remember graduating from college and just feeling totally overwhelmed by all the possibilities, and I also felt this incredible pressure to find the one thing that I was made to do. And one thing that a good theology of work can help with is actually alleviating some of that pressure. If it is true that God is at work in every industry, and if it is true that God is using his people in every field, and if it is true that you can partner with the work that God is already doing in all these different workplaces, then that sort of eases that burden of having to find the one thing that I was made to do. What if we thought about our work as just finding the places where God is already at work, seeing how we can join in that work, finding the places that are broken or in need of redemption, and seeing how we might be able to offer some redemptive solution? Might not be complete, might be partial, probably will be, right? But it's more a matter of finding ourselves in a grand plot that's already unfolding rather than having to sort of create our own life trajectory, which I think places a lot of undue pressure on students who are just getting out of the workforce.
Yeah, that's great, Ryan. I would just also add, you know, you've been working your whole life up to this point to like get to this job you're supposed to have. It's supposed to be this amazing experience. And, you know, you have worked hard to do it, and you've hopefully had fun on the way and made some great friendships. And now it's like, all right, I'm going to go do this thing. And I think it's so encouraging and relieving to know, actually, I can join with God in whatever he's doing, wherever that opportunity opens up. It may not be the right fit right away. It may be work you don't love doing. The other factor about work is, since we spend so much time there, it actually becomes the primary arena for discipleship. It becomes a place where we are formed, where the decisions we make, the way we treat people, God's using all those things to form us as we are also influencing those around us. And so to be prepared to continue training, and the training is what it's always been about so far, which is to just become more like Christ. And he's going to use you in whatever that job is. And the beauty is also with this view of work this way, or like not feeling like, hey, that this job is going to be my calling. It's actually the place you express your calling. And so that takes a lot of pressure off the job. If you are in a job where you go, hey, this doesn't allow me to be who Christ calls me to be, you don't have to have the job. There's other work you can go do. So I think it gives you the freedom, a little bit of the sense of like, oh, I don't have to have all this pressure. But also to recognize it is a tool God will continue to use to shape you and mold you into the image of his son.
This is one of the things that I wanted to ask you about anyways. What is the difference between work and calling? Where do they intersect, and where are they different things?
The first thing I'll say is that when the Bible uses calling language, almost universally, it's using that language to refer to a calling to a particular kind of identity rather than a particular kind of task.
Wow.
So when the New Testament says that you have been called, usually what it means is that you've been called to be a particular sort of person. And what that is a person who is conformed to the image of Jesus Christ. Usually that term is also used in the plural. So you're called together with others, saints, brothers and sisters, to pursue the same calling and goal. But then theologians have taken that and they've developed a distinction between what is sometimes called primary calling or secondary calling or something like this, in which everybody has that primary calling, right? Conformity to the image of Jesus. But there might be secondary callings, which are aligned with your giftings or your predilections or your desires, right? So I don't know how far we ought to push that, because I think it's entirely true that you can be conformed to the image of Jesus Christ and never have a job that really ever fulfills you. I think a lot of people have that story. But I think it is nevertheless true that the Spirit of God does gift his people in ways that uniquely equip them for the works that he's prepared for them to do, right? So I don't take calling to mean that there's just one thing that you've been put on the earth to do. I would more want to understand it that there is one kind of person that you are put on the earth to be, which is John, fully conformed to the image of Jesus, or Ross, fully conformed to the image of Jesus. Now, that looks different than Ryan, fully conformed to the image of Jesus, right? And then secondarily, we might have things that the Spirit has uniquely equipped us to do, but it's not as if we will have wasted our life if we've never found that one thing. So that's the one thing I always want to qualify, and then I'll hand it over to Ross.
Just the idea that the Bible, when it says calling, it's talking about being called to Christ, being conformed to his image, being fully satisfied in him. In a society where it says you go to work to find your identity and your purpose, that is that is incredibly life-giving because you don't need your work to do that. In fact, you don't want your work to do that because if you end up finding the wrong work, then you've lost your sense of identity and purpose immediately as the work, either you don't like it or they fire you. So the beauty is you get to take your calling into your work. So you get to express exactly who God's made you to be. So like Ryan and I were both baristas, you know, and we're both called to Christ, and we got to express what it meant to be called to Christ as a barista. And I can tell you, I'm sure we had differences. You know, Ryan was probably super focused on like doing this really well, studied the coffee bean, could tell you all the details of like where this came from. And I was like, how are you doing today? You know, like, how's your day going? I don't know. Like, both of those things are just maybe more who we are, who God's made us to be, but also like an expression of, you know, the love and concern for the work from beginning to end, from where the bean came from to how the customer gets to enjoy the product, you know? And so like, you know, and in that sense, you could say, man, like being a barista was kind of cool because we helped create an environment for somebody, hopefully to either one, like have some quiet space to do some good work, or two, like have, like be in the business of helping people connect with each other, you know? And that gives a whole, you start thinking of your work in those terms, you're bringing your calling into it because you're expressing who God's made you to be in it. And you're finding a beautiful way to do that, just how he's made you to be. And so, yeah, I love that Ryan kind of even said like, hey, it's not like a uniformity. So like, what does it mean to do that job you're doing distinctly Christian as you, who God's made you to be, would do it?
Say more about scripture for me here. I would love to know, like, where would you take us as we continue thinking about this is what we can learn from scripture about how to be thinking about work in these early stages?
Well, I'm going to go first because Ryan is a professional theologian and he can add in where I missed and clean up. But I like to, I like to start with the first five words of scripture. You know, in the beginning, God created. You know, this is God's self-disclosure of who he is to humanity. The first thing he tells us is he's a worker. He created. The very first thing we learn about him. And Ryan, back me up if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's a major distinctive from gods in the ancient Near East, who would have seen humanity as basically doing all the work to serve them. And God comes on the scene and says, you know, Yahweh says, I'm a worker and I'm making you in my image as workers, and plants them in this beautiful thing that he called really good, which is why we don't have a sacred secular divide. And the fact that Jesus put flesh and bones on and came down into his creation. And the end of the story is coming down from heaven, the city, right? So there's this movement towards heaven and earth coming into one realm, which means it's good, but also that, you know, yeah, God gave us a mandate or a job description. When he created us and he said, male and female together, this is your work to do. Take what I've made and do something good with it. Cultivate it, make it better, let it grow. And so that's kind of like the genesis of the idea of work in a very quick form. You know, people have written many, many, many pages about this. Ryan, what would you add?
Well, just to piggyback on what you said, Ross, that's absolutely right. If you read other ancient Near Eastern cosmologies or accounts of the origin of the world, universally, you're going to see that humans are created to be slaves of the gods, right? Mm. There's a very famous Babylonian text called the Enuma Elish, in which the gods are sitting around and they are they're depicted as digging irrigation trenches. And so they're out there in the hot sun, they're digging these trenches to irrigate their fields. And they say, man, this is brutal. I hate this. Our backs are breaking from all this work. They say, let's create humans to do this work for us. And so they do. And then so humans have to dig the irrigation trenches and then they cultivate the fields and then they bring the sacrifices to the gods who are just laying around. Right. And so, the biblical account is worlds apart. What you've got is Yahweh, not only does he work, but he creates humans as his vice regents, right? He says to them, I have this good work to do to cultivate this beautiful place that I've made, this place that is good, suitable for flourishing and thriving, and I share it with you, right? Mm. You enter into my work not as a slave, but as a co-laborer, which is an incredibly different vision, right? Where work has some sort of inherent purpose and dignity because it's something that God does. Now, I want to be clear, like, it doesn't mean that our work is salvific, right? That our work saves us or anybody else or saves the world. It's not that, right? The work of Jesus saves the world. But God has nevertheless made a world that is good, full of potential, latent possibilities. And he's given human beings these incredible capacities to engage with their world creatively in a way that appears to be unique among the animals. So that's what I would add.
Wow. That is extremely compelling to think about the way historically in so many different spaces, the way that this has been thought about is that work is sort of the act of slave labor, is in slavery to the gods as opposed to in partnership with them. It even makes the task that God gave to Adam of naming the animals feel like, I mean, these are labels that are going to be slapped onto these things like for the rest of humanity here and translated and changed for sure. But like you get to give these things names, this very meaningful, important thing that he would give him that job, that feels like a really significant step of partnership, like you said, as opposed to I'm tired of this. It's your turn. Get to work, please.
Yeah, it's so good. It's just it's a radically different vision. It's not like God saying, hey, you know, I've already summoned up all these animals and I'm kind of tired. Why don't you do it? It's more of God sharing his world with creatures at tremendous risk, we should add too, right? Humans don't do a great job of this. It goes great for two pages.
Yeah,
right? It's like, you know, it's like your parents giving the keys to a sports car to their kids and being like, have a great time. And the kid hits a bunch of trash cans like on the block before even getting out onto a major road. But that's what this God is like. He is unrelenting in his insistence that he shares his life with creatures.
Yeah. And the story continues with a theology of work. You can, you know, continue to trace the theme of work. The next part is, you know, work now gets more complicated after humanity decides, I want to do my own thing with that sport car that you gave me. But, you know, that means not that work is cursed itself, but that it's harder and it's more toilsome. It doesn't produce the same kind of fruit that it would have. Even the best of intentions now have consequences that we didn't really want and that actually produce harm in the world.
And we also need to add that, you know, the New Testament also claims that for those who are in Christ, the Spirit of God has poured out, right? Meaning that the Spirit has opened up new vistas and new possibilities for God's people to join redemptively in the work that God is doing to reconcile all things to himself. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't do those things under those same conditions that Ross just described, where things are complicated, where we're beset by futility and frustration in our work. But what is it that Paul means when he says, you know, the Spirit of God dwells in you, right? Part of what he's claiming is that you guys, y'all, the church, individual believers, you're outposts of the new creation, right? So what does that mean? Well, you're a school teacher. You might not be able to control what your school district teaches at the curriculum level. You might not be able to control every development culturally. There might be things going on there that you think are profoundly broken. But your classroom can be an outpost of the new creation, right? It can be a place where things are on earth like they are in heaven. Maybe not perfectly, but your cubicle can be an outpost of the new creation, right? Any small territory where the Spirit is reclaiming through the work of the saints can be an outpost of the new creation, right? So that ties together chapters 3 and 4 of that great narrative, right? Redemption and consummation. We work in the power of the Spirit, looking forward to when God is actually going to restore all these broken structures.
I really love that being outposts of this new creation, outposts of salvation, of the coming kingdom. And help me think like practically. What does that like? How do we invite people to take practical steps into that? Like, those feel like things that are like, I can totally get behind that. I love that. I am an outpost for these things. And then I go to work that first day and I'm starting at the absolute bottom. I have no clout. Nobody knows me or trusts me. So when I'm a nobody starting off at this company or in this school or whatever it might be, how do I start taking steps in that direction of purposefully partnering with Jesus in that work as that outpost?
Yeah, but I think that's the key question, John. I think that is really important. And I think it's important to say, like, you have creative imagination and capacity that God's given you. And he has strategically placed you there. So I think on day one, your job is, how do I do this with the most competence that I can? Because that's kind of a rare commodity today. But that would be doing it. If you are working for the Lord and not for the boss or the company or even yourself, how would you do the tasks? And you would want to do them with excellence and with competency. And I think as you do that, if you begin to notice, everybody in my office seems to talk to this one person really in a condescending way, you know, I'm not going to do that because that's not who I am. That's not what Jesus would do. And so you're going to start to identify things like that, that pop up throughout your day, or you might be in a spreadsheet and you might go, that formula is, you know, not exactly right. It's kind of benefiting the company in a way that's disadvantaging the customer, and the customer is never going to know about it, you know, and it could be that minuscule, you know, you're going to be faced with the decision of like, okay, like that might be brokenness. How do I want to approach this? But I think those are the kinds of things that, you know, I would say, you know, journal about that, write it down. People need to know the answer to this question, you know, like pass this on to the next Christian that you come in contact with in your industry, you know, like, hey, I've got some notes. I'd love to hear what you've done in here. I'd love to learn from you on this. And those kinds of things, becoming regular practices would be, you know, some encouragement to you. One more thing you might consider doing is maybe a cheesy word, but like workplace liturgies. So if you're thinking about on day one, you know, this workplace is going to begin to form me, but there's something I can do here as an active agent. And so, you know, find an appropriate time, or maybe it's even like a minute long thing, or it's a post-it note on somewhere that just reminds you, I'm with God in the daily grind for others. Or maybe it's a verse, or maybe it's, you know, just taking a 5-minute break before lunch and just getting quiet, and maybe building into a rhythm. Like before I go talk to my boss, I'm going to say a prayer for him or her, right? Just in my head, just 30 seconds or less. You know, just start finding opportunities like that, that can be practices that you can start going, if this place is going to shape me, I'm going to build in some things that I want it to shape me in a certain way.
It can be these small, consistent practices or a daily liturgy of reminding, like, I am being formed here. And what does it look like for me to partner with Jesus in that formation on purpose? And I love it that it can be some of those simple practices that can then launch us into other things. Ryan, Ross, there's so much more in your book. These are just giving us tastes of some of the topics that come up in the different chapters throughout the book. Where can people engage with Faithful Work? And are there other, how can people keep up with you guys and the work that you're doing as you're promoting the book and working through some of those things?
Yeah, I mean, you can find the book on Amazon. It's probably the easiest way to get the book. But beyond that, you know, denverinstitute.org. We do a podcast called the Faith and Work Podcast. Might be the easiest way to just kind of continue learning from people who are putting this into practice, and some thought leaders, some people who are just working in different industries, figuring this out. That would be a good place to go. Ryan, what would you say?
Well, I mostly write books about dead German theologians. So if your audience can't get enough of that, they can email me through the Denver Seminary website. But it is true. I'm collaborating with a colleague here at the seminary, Dr. David Bushart. We're writing a book that is slated for release with IVP Academic next year, which is also a theology of work. But it's considering the ways that finitude and fallenness and sin impact our experience of work. So it's wow. Considerably darker and less rosy than Faithful Work. So read it when you're in a good mood, and it'll bring you down, and then you can read Faithful Work to bring you back up.
And I will say, for alumni in particular, you can find the book at IVP and use your alumni discount. So make sure you take advantage of that. So, man, Ross, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for sharing these things. I mean, our alumni are making a huge transition, and work is one of the places where they are going to be investing so much of this next season of life. And so for us to at least be able to give them a leg up into that time of saying, how can you start well in the ways that you're thinking about work and the ways that you're engaging at work, and recognizing that you're meeting Jesus when you get there. You're not convincing him to come with you. I just think that that is so vital for our alumni to be able to hear these things from you guys as they get started in this massive transition. So thanks so much for making this investment in our alumni. I'm really grateful for both of you.
Great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, a couple takeaways to consider from this conversation. We'll say there are guidelines for framing the way you think about the work you're doing after graduation. First, how can you live out your primary calling as a Christ follower in that place? Whether or not a job feels like a good fit, whether or not it's fulfilling all the time, as you enter the regular rhythm of work long term, how has God equipped you to be you, fully conformed to the image of Jesus in that space for whatever length of time you're there? Second, your work is a partnership with God. You don't have to convince him to be there. He's already there, and he's inviting you to do it with him. What does it look like to do your job as if God were your boss, your direct supervisor? Whether or not you love the work or find it fulfilling, wouldn't it make you want to be ethical and excellent in what you do if that were true? Alumni, some of you will step from graduation right into a job that you love, and some of you won't. But no matter your circumstances, you absolutely can do that work in a way that honors God, the first worker, and has a meaningful impact on those around you. Ryan and Ross, thanks again for joining us for this episode. I'm so grateful for your partnership as we step into this new series on After Four. Alumni, if you've loved this conversation, stay tuned for more from Ryan and Ross. There are several other topics that we covered that just didn't make it into this episode, and you'll be able to catch those later on in the series. And then be sure to also grab their book, Faithful Work, In the Daily Grind with God and for Others. You can find the link to it in the show notes so that you can find it on IVP's website, where you can get 40% off using your alumni discount. Also in the show notes, you'll be able to find links to some other work-related episodes that we've done on After Four and from our other alumni podcast, InterVarsity World Changers. Then be sure to come back next week as we dive into our first of several conversations with alumni like you who have made the transition from graduation to full-time work. We'll start off by chatting with Dr. Felicia Song about her experience making the jump into full-time academics and following Jesus as a professor. Thanks for tuning in, and I will see you in the After, alumni. Hey, thanks so much for joining us today, alumni. If there was anything that you learned, really enjoyed, or that encouraged you from today's episode, would you send us a DM or tag us in a story? We'd love to hear about it. You can find us at After4Pod on Instagram and Facebook. And if you haven't already, take just a second to unlock your phone and subscribe to the podcast. If your platform lets you, leave us a rating and a review. And if you like what we're doing here, share us with your InterVarsity or other post-graduation friends. Thanks again for listening, and I will see you in the After, alumni.